Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. We have so much respect for Ken Lovett at public radio, I can't even begin to tell you. Welcome back, Ken.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
Okay, look, this is a dirty legislature. Everybody's holding their nose. People are walking away from it. Preet Bharara is everyone's hero at this stage of the game. Is there any hope for cleaning this stinking mess up?
You know, I have to say, deep down, I have to think there's got to be some hope, or then what am I doing here for the last two decades? I don't think it's imminent, for sure. You really don't get the sense that the people in power recognize the problem. You know, I think there was a poll that came out from Siena College this past week that said almost 90% think that corruption is a major deal with the state government. And yet, only about 20%, a little less probably, say it should be a top priority to clean it up. It wasn't among the top priorities. And I think that's part of the issue. You and I have talked about this a lot. I think that in some cases, the politicians feel emboldened because people aren't showing up at the polls anymore. If they do, they're reelecting the same people. So the public has yet to send a real message other than through polls that they're taking it seriously. Really, the watchdog groups in terms of like the State Ethics Commission and the Legislative Ethics Commission, and they haven't shown any real resolve to clean it up. And the only ones who have done it so far are the federal prosecutors, including, as you mentioned, Preet Bharara.
Well, you know, you mentioned the watchdog groups. So let me ask you this. There is a whole bunch of people who fundraise, and they say they're here for purposes of cleaning up the legislature. People like the League of Women Voters do a fair job. Two others that come to mind, and NYPIRG, all our hero, Blair Horner, has done such a good job in critiquing the legislature. But then you get some that, I don't know, I mean, you get people like Dick Dady and Citizens Union. When the governor came out with his very spoiled ideas about, you know, an overall setting up a watchdog, J-COPE, they were very quick to jump on and say, we're for it, along with the League of Women Voters, I believe, at the time. And I severely criticized them. I thought, what is it with these people? Why, if they're established to clean things up, basically, why are they drinking the Kool-Aid?
I remember at that time, part of it, that people were at the table. And in a way, it's weird when the people who are considered watchdog groups are at the table, because then they have a stake in making it work.
What do you mean at the table, Ken?
They're part of the negotiations, that they're being consulted, they're being brought in, they're being made to feel like their opinions matter, which, you know, but then you feel that if you're being part of that process, sometimes you feel like then you have to at least justify it.
Well, but aren't they selling out?
Well, you know, you can argue that there's a lot of self-interest in this town, and certainly some of these groups, that's no different. Look, you know, when Sheldon Silver had the issue of sexual harassment that was running rampant, you know, with Vito Lopez in particular and a couple of other lawmakers, and there was a lot of criticism about that, but a lot of the women's groups, you know, held their powder. They didn't say get rid of him. All these groups,
because they were worried about Silver having so much power that he could hurt them.
Yeah, and also he's been a friend to us over the years. And, you know, Republicans rightfully in that case said, look, you know, if it was one of us, they would have been saying, oh, you know, Dean Skelos, who was leader at the time, must resign and this and that. But they really gave cover to Sheldon Silver. No one ever called for his resignation. No one ever put the heat to him because he was doing legislatively what they wanted. But the reality was at the time that even if Silver went because of that, it's not like the assembly would suddenly be against those issues. Whoever replaced him was sure going to be. So you do see that. You see a lot of self-interest. You know, but the groups, what their role for a lot of people is to raise points and to say, this is what we think is wrong, and this is, you know, what we think would be a good idea how to clean it up.
I don't know how we got on this tangent, Ken, and I apologize, but it does raise an interesting question to me. I mean, let's take somebody like Citizens Union, and look, some of the top figures in the state belong to the Citizens Union board and other people, and my friend Jerry Benjamin, among others, and these are non-compromising people. But on the other hand, it has always seemed to me that some of these guys who run these organizations, and, you know, they're fundraising mills in a lot of ways, have to go back and say to their board, look, I've accomplished something. So they take a half a loaf or a quarter of a loaf rather than holding out and being the kind of people that Blair Horner, for example, is at Nyberg. And it leaves me with a bad taste in my mouth. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, these people are also, they have boards, like you said, but look, you know, all of them do. I mean, you know, the League of Women Voters, I think Nyberg too has received money, if I'm wrong, but I believe they've received money from the teachers unions and they've done things, you know, to give them cover and help them. It's part of the game in Albany, I guess. And you have to, I guess, know that. Some people would say, oh, the self-proclaimed good government groups. But, you know, I guess you got to break it down to what they're arguing and whether or not you believe it is of value. I mean, very few people get involved in this place that don't have a stake in it or have an interest. You know, I say to sources all the time, if I'm writing a story and someone says, well, someone fed you that and they're trying to do X. And I said, yeah, probably. But the reality for me as a reporter is I don't care what the motive of someone is necessarily, other than if it's a justifiable story. If I think it's an interesting story and an accurate and a compelling story, then I don't care. Very few people come out of the goodness of your heart and try to give you something.
I couldn't agree
more.
They
all have reasons behind it. And it's my job to say, is this a real thing or not a real thing? And if it is a real thing, I don't care what the reason is behind it, but I'll pursue it.
I always say to my students, you know, a wife comes to an investigator and says, my stinking husband, you know, who's divorcing me now after 40 years, he stole on his income tax. And I always say to them, so is it a story, even though she may have had a get-even motive? The answer is, of course it's a story.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, very few people here who don't have a motive about something. And that probably includes the government reform groups. You know, but very few people in Albany don't have a motive. And it's our jobs to kind of break through that and see what's real and what's not and try to present that to the public.
Well, you know, this governor has a reputation now of having come up with some ideas for ethics reform, and many people, including me, think he sold out way too early in terms of what he got. And we now know that the J. Cope Group, which is the main ethics group, hasn't lived up to a lot of people's expectations. And one of the things that we are looking at now is a call for change so that this group will be smaller, will do a better job, will have new appointees from better people. What do you hear?
Well, first of all, I want to take exception with one thing. I can't say that the governor sold out early, because that would mean that he wanted it in the first place. And there are a lot of people who think he puts a lot of stuff out there knowing he's not going to get it. He doesn't fight hard for it, but he could say, hey, I got the best deal I could.
I accept your amendment.
But in terms of J. Cope, look, there's a bunch of things. You know, the secrecy of it is a huge thing. They can't discuss anything they do. Probably the best job in Albany is the money made by the J. Cope press secretary, press spokesman, who basically could say no comment for his entire career. By law, I'm not allowed to comment. That's a huge deal that people don't know what's going on within J. Cope. Another big thing is that even though it's a board and it has members that were appointed by the governor, by the assembly, by the Senate, it's easy to block an investigation. If two of any of those groups' appointments decide we don't want to do it, then that can block the appointment. And so what does that mean? That means you could have an overwhelming majority of the board saying we should investigate X. And if the person who helped appoint it is the target of that, they can block an investigation into themselves. And then they don't talk about it because they can't talk about it by law, and so nobody knows what's going on.
But Ken Lovett, here's something I don't understand. You get elected to the assembly, you're a human being, or to the Senate. Your kids kiss you goodbye. They say, Daddy, where are you going? He said, make laws to help the people. They get up here, and then they start to act in the most weird ways, self-serving ways. Doesn't anybody ever look in a mirror?
I can't look into the heart and souls of the people
I can,
here.
Yeah.
But I will say, look, there are a lot of people who are in it for the right reason. You could argue that those aren't always the leaders of the conferences and the leaders of the legislature, but you know, the longer you're here, the more insulated you get is an argument that can be made.
And the more self-serving you get.
And the more self-serving, and it becomes about preservation of power, and it becomes, you know, centralizing power.
And how about money?
That's my next step. And raising money, because money is power in this place. You know, a lot of people, we talk about the governor all the time and whether Preparara is looking into him and what he's looking into. It would shock me, and I mean shock me, if the governor got indicted or anything like that for getting money, basically padding his own pockets, lining his own pockets.
I agree
That's
with
not
you.
What he's about.
He's about power.
He's
though.
About power. And so, you know, raising money and pay to play and things like that. And again, I'm not saying he's done any of those things, but he obviously raises a lot of money with people before, with business before the state. I'm not saying he's done anything illegal. But that's what a lot of people up here are about. It's about power. It's about money, and money is power.
But wait, but Ken Lovett, what happens if you put out, you go and you put $1 billion into Buffalo, New York, and you say, okay, and a big part of this is going to be done, but you have to be in business for 50 years, and we find out that the only bid could go to people who said that they'd been in business for 50 years, number one, and number two, it turns out that they give a lot of money to the governor's campaign. That's disgusting, isn't it?
You don't believe in coincidences? Look, there's no doubt that the governor, like I said, he gets a lot of money from a lot of people who do business. But here's the problem that's hard to prove things. And this is why it's hard to prove. Unless you have a real smoking gun, right, that says, okay, I'm telling you, you know, give us this donation and you will get this bid. Or this guy's been a great person for us. Let's give him a job. You know, let's give him the deal. The problem is, and this is what would be hard if you're a prosecutor, is someone giving because they want, and is that illegal? You know, so I'm going to give you money because I'm hoping that you then will, you know, shower me with favors. That's one option. The other option is, you know, we have this deal that would happen. And the other is, well, you know, this governor or this lawmaker is doing what I like, and he's doing things I like, so I'm going to give him money.
So how come both Shelley
Silver... Maybe I got a contract and I gave him money because I'm happy about that.
So how come both Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos end up convicted by juries? Because I think the shadow of a doubt fell into both of those cases.
No, but there was a big difference in this because, again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier about Shelley Silver lined his, if the conviction holds, Shelley Silver lined his pockets personally by using his private law firm and the law firm he worked for and intermingling that business with state business. Dean Skelos, the same thing. He helped provide for his child using, you know, the private sector and using his influence that way. In this case, it would be very hard, again, unless you had a smoking gun, to say, you know, the logical answer is, well, the governor or the leader or this senator or assemblyman, I gave them because I like what they're doing in Albany.
No, you have to
prove otherwise.
No, but can I get that? But I'm a little bit bothered by something else here, and that is that, yes, you're right. I agree with you. Andrew Cuomo would not line his pockets personally.
We think.
We think. But nevertheless, the acquisition and maintenance of political power, which of course leads to power, leads to being reelected and, you know, he has to go to those people. If they get a no-bid contract and then you go and you get money from them, that ain't good, is it?
No, look, and there's also things known as appearance of conflict of interest. And, you know, he'll argue and others argue, and somewhat rightfully so, that part of the reason they have improved disclosure of, you know, campaign finance, you know, donations.
That's true.
They have improved that, and they have improved that. And their argument now is, look, you can tell, you can make these links because of what we've done, and then the public can decide, and the prosecutors, if they want to look, can decide whether something was wrong or not wrong. Now, the, you know, big issue, as we talked earlier, is that most of the public's not paying attention to this stuff, but people are watching, the reporters are watching, and, you know, law enforcement certainly is watching these days, and I think that's the big difference, yes, and it can look bad but not be illegal.
Right.
Which you would hope that they would recognize that and not send that message, but I think that's a much harder nut to crack.
When these elections are all over, we now see that there are going to be special elections for Dean Skelos, the former leader's seat out on Long Island, and it looks like Kaminsky, the Democrat, might win. We also see that, you know, the Republicans are only one vote up. We also see that a Republican senator who they were counting on to maintain their majority is running for the United States Congress and is out of there, and that seat might go south also for them. So that leaves a number of questions, not the least of which is the famous IDC, or Independent Democratic Conference, which went over across the street and broke bread with the Republicans, and now, even though the Democrats have supported the Republican majority, assuming that they lose these races, the Republicans, I know I'm long-winded here, but assuming they lose these races and the Democrats have more Democrats than the Republicans do, more senators, will, in fact, the governor have to go to bat for the Democrats?
I think in this case they will. Now, let's not forget it was the oddest thing in in the last decade, a whole lot of odd things that have gone on in Albany. One of them was that the Democrats actually, for a while, had the numerical majority. The party had the numerical majority. That's not the case right now, but they had more Democrats than Republicans, except they were so fractured that the Republicans actually held power.
And a history, we should say, of cookery. In other words, guys were getting sent to jail from the Democratic side, and that didn't smell very good. So, you know, you had a point of choosing between this bad one or that bad one.
But I think you have a governor now, at least as of early February 2016, who is trying to make nice and trying to make amends with the left of the Democratic Party, the base of the party. And a lot of the stuff he's been putting out there, whether it's paid family leave or another increase in the minimum wage, he's going to need the Democrats to pass a lot of that stuff. So I think if the Republicans block it, because they're worried about alienating their own base, if they block a lot of these progressive measures, the governor may just say, you know what, this relationship doesn't behoove me anymore. This doesn't really do me, it doesn't do well for me anymore. So I'm going to push for the Democrats to reunite. Now, what you'll see is you're not going to see the five members of the Independent Democratic Caucus go back to the Democrats. They would align with them. They'll still be their own little entity, but they'll do what they did with the Republicans. So instead of aligning themselves and creating a majority coalition with the Republicans, they'll do just the same thing with the Democrats. So you'll still have like this fragmented Democratic conference, but they'll be in charge.
Well, Ken Lovett, before we go any further, let's just say that there was a reason that they went over to the Republican side. These, I call them the traitors, went over to the Republican side. They got something out of it. They got made chairman of committees. And will the Democrats be willing to do that for them, too?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. I think it'll be the exact same situation, maybe even a little better for them in the sense that they'll probably be able to get more of their bills passed than even they've gotten now. They get some bills passed now, but there's a lot of stuff. Look, Jeff Klein, you know, has been one of the guys pushing the last couple of years paid family leave in the Senate. But the Republicans haven't let that go to the floor. That'll have a much better chance of passing. If the Republicans don't make a political calculus that it helps them to get this off the table before the elections, it would have a much better chance of passing if the Democrats and the independent Democrats are running the chamber.
I can't let you go without going back to one of my favorite subjects, which is William Rapfogel. Now, he was sentenced to jail because he was stealing a lot of money from the Metropolitan Council on Jewish Poverty.
Yeah.
And he goes to jail. And his wife, of course, has been Shelley Silver's longtime chief of staff. And she's now out of a job, will qualify for a pension of an awful lot of money. And when the feds looked under the beds and things in their apartment, they found some real money, which she denied any understanding of. Well, Rapfogel is already out of jail. Does this prove that even though it can be pretty heinous that if it's who you know that gets you out early?
There are those who say that now he's still in prison, but he has been moved from a minimum security prison or medium security, I forget where he was, to a work release prison. So that means he gets to go to work every day. And this is only after 14 months of a term that's supposed to go 3 to 10 years.
Yeah.
After 14 months, he now goes to work every day, and he applied for and was given granted release. He can go home. He's Orthodox Jewish, and he can go home Friday night for the Jewish Sabbath, and he doesn't have to return to the prison till Saturday night. So he's got a lot of, it's not exactly hard time. Meanwhile, Judy Rapfogel, who obviously had a very bad year watching her husband go to prison and watching Sheldon Silver get convicted, her longtime boss and friend, she put in for her retirement papers in the, I think it was January 14th. And by my calculation, she's going to earn as a pension $126,000 a year, which is more than, a lot of people listening make. It's also more than most state government employees, current employees make.
Well, that is an extraordinary story. And because it's so close, so understandable how all of this works. So Rapfogel gets accused. They ferret him out. They find out that he's stealing this money. a very close friend of Shelley Silver's. And all of a sudden, he just takes a plea, mm-hmm. just goes to prison. No trial, no publicity, just goes to prison, then gets out of prison under great circumstances. Is that really what this is all about? You know, you plead, you don't want to make a fuss, and somebody takes care of you.
There's an argument to be made there, certainly. A lot of eyebrows were raised by, you know, after only 14 months that he's in work release already. And look, I mean, he didn't murder anybody. We should point that. We should also point out that there's no evidence or suggestion that Judy Rapfogel was involved in anything that her husband or
she didn't know
or,
that money
or Sheldon Silver
she
was doing.
She certainly didn't know that money was in the apartment.
it certainly raises questions. If it was somebody else, if it wasn't someone who was so politically corrected, I think it is fair to ask the question. And the Department of Corrections, I have asked that question to, says, no, you know, this we do grant this, not a ton, but we do grant this type of work release and this type of home release. But, you know, if it was you or me, would we, after 14 months, be given these kind of perks? You know, it's a fair question to ask.
Indeed. Let's very quickly, in the next 3 minutes, talk about Cuomo and de Blasio. The mayor goes out to campaign for Hillary Clinton. And, you know, bring his progressive stripe. After all, he did save the governor from the Working Families Party. They didn't want to nominate him. They were going to nominate Zephyr Teachout. And he came in there, and he's supposed to be a progressive, self-diagnosed progressive, and he saved the governor's hash. So what's this all about?
Well, I mean, they're still fighting. Now it's over affordable housing. The governor in his budget inserted several things that really took a shot at the city. He basically said that the city should now be paying more for Medicaid, more of a share of Medicaid, and more of a share of CUNY to the tune of $800 million. Overall, he basically tried to pass on about $1 billion worth of costs to the city in this budget. On top of that, the mayor's number one priority is affordable housing, and the governor slipped in something into the budget that would require when the city wants to issue certain kind of bonds to pay for these affordable housing units that they're going to build, that it would now have to be approved by a state authority, basically giving the governor a big role in the Senate and the Assembly, a big role in how that money is spent, taking it away from the mayor. So that's the latest squirming.
So they're still they're still not playing well together.
No, they're still not playing well together. Meanwhile, the mayor went out to Iowa, as you said, and it turned out to be a huge embarrassment for him because, first of all, if you remember, he hemmed and hawed. He wouldn't endorse Hillary Clinton, and he kind of embarrassed her on the day she announced by saying, and he managed her Senate campaign. He was her New York campaign manager. And he said, she had to prove herself to him, her progressive credentials. So he calls up the Clintons and he says, hey, I'd like to come to Iowa for you. And they're like, no, that's okay. We have enough surrogates. We don't need you. And he says, well, I'd like to go knock on doors anyway. And they're like, all right, do that. And so basically he went out for 4 days doing what a 20-year-old intern from a college would do who wants to start out in politics, just knocking on doors, you know, thousands of doors over 4 days. A lot of people didn't know who he was. I mean, it turned out to be a big embarrassment for the mayor.
Now, we have almost no time left, but I just got to know something. Do you think that the people of New York City are going to be very happy, even if they don't like de Blasio, from the governor making them pay more for their CUNY and for the City University? I mean, isn't that a big risk for the governor?
It is. And a matter of fact, especially when he was trying to make himself much more popular in New York, which he is. He's much more popular, according to the polls, than de Blasio is in New York City.
Yeah, but he still ain't that popular himself.
You know, But it was a risk. And the minute we started reporting it, and we had it on our front page 2 days in a row, the governor backed down and said, oh, wait a minute. You know, it's not going to cost the city a penny. We're just trying to find efficiencies. It turned into instead of a cost shift, it was, we're trying to find efficiencies. And if we do, it won't cost the city anything.
Why would anybody believe that?
Look, he tried it, he got caught, and he backed off. They cut bait quickly, so it didn't become a bigger issue than it had become.
It's great talking to Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News. Thank you so much, Ken, for being with us.
Always fun. Be well.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.